what's happening now with the study of the mind and also the quantum theory and the physicists and all of the different science are kind of more going into the direction where we now can envision the world as being alive and everything is pure energy, really. That's what the physicists are telling us. And so everything is energy and everything is interconnected. And that sense of interconnection, if we only could embrace it, that in itself is very healing.
Welcome, podcast listeners, to the Wellness Connection. My name is Karen Bell, your host, the occupational therapist, a health and wellness coach, passionate about wellness, bringing quality living to everyday life. And we have here Jared Forte, our producer.
Yep. Mm-hmm. You did really great. That was really good. Real smooth. It's like you've been practicing this song. Real smooth. How's everybody doing? As always, before we get into our interview I'm really excited about today, we want to do a quick check-in to let you know sort of what's been going on in our wellness journey. And I think our guest is also going to maybe share a few words so you get a chance to hear her voice early on before we get into her story. But yeah, so I'm going to let Karen start and share what her wellness journey is. Put Karen on the spot.
Yeah, you did. I had to just now reflect back and say what I would include in my wellness journey. Well, what popped in my mind was The Weeknd. The Weeknd.
The R&B singer?
No, actually, no. I just had a friend that came in, flew in from California, and we all had a gathering. It was really enriching. It was a catch-up as well, because I hadn't seen this friend for maybe, I would say, about 5 years. And it was ironic or spare the moment that they even thought about me to call and say I'm in town. So that was nice. And I got to spend time with his family and meet up with some other friends within the circle. And all we did was just sat around and had some wine and chat and recapped and laughed. Celebrated some graduations as well that took place that Friday. And it was good. I hadn't done that in a long time. Normally, I just have this slew of things on a list to complete on my downtime on the weekends. But I didn't do that. I had crabs. How about crabs?
That sounds good.
Yes. It was exciting. It was good. So pretty much my wellness consisted of just being social.
Okay.
You know, engaging with, you know, I won't say disconnected, but reconnecting with some friends.
That sounds great. Mm-hmm. It's always nice to reconnect with friends.
Yes.
Okay, cool. So I guess I'll share. I guess for me, writing, I got some personal writing done and I kind of strayed away from doing that. And almost a lot of times, if I haven't been writing just kind of intentionally and for myself, mm-hmm. it gets to a point where I get anxious about, okay, is this going to make sense anymore? Or can I even do this? It just feels very difficult. Mm-hmm. It goes into the cycle of why have I not been writing? You know, that whole, like, you know, I was doing so well. Then that loop can start yes. on you, and then it'll just keep you away. Just like, oh, well, I just won't do it today. You know, right. Just because there is something about facing the blank page mm-hmm. and trying to judge what comes out. But it did work out that I was able to get some writing done, and I felt good doing it. And, you know, my words aren't coming together the way I would like for them to, but I don't care. It's just like, I just want to enjoy the process of just returning to that because I know it's very fruitful for me. Mm-hmm. I know that if I can chart like the quality of my life and the clarity of my thinking and all those things, a lot of it lines up to whether or not I'm reflecting intentionally through writing, you know. If I'm not conscious, that kind of brings me back to like being conscious and being present with what's going on and not just plodding through, because you can recognize patterns. If you capture them, you can just see the patterns that you need to maybe try to break away from. So writing has been the thing for me. I think that's the most significant in my wellness journey.
Yeah, that's interesting. I learned just a lot, actually a lot more about the intensity of writing and how that can potentially be a roller coaster ride for someone who's awesome at doing it and then haven't been doing it for, I guess, as a routine, you know, in your lifestyle, and then have to revisit it and now reach that, I guess, that height of good at it.
It's just like going to the gym, and if you've been working out and then you haven't been in a while and you got to go through being sore again and all of that stuff. And you're like, oh, why did I stop? You know, why did I go through that? Why am I putting myself it's that chatter that's in my head that I think that's the real only real enemy. Also, this wanting to be good and wanting it to be good, like, and trying to control it. It's like, okay. And then there's my ego is tied up. But, you know, I'm nice with that pen. So when I put it down there, it needs to be a masterpiece.
Yeah.
When I know the reality is, it's always just chipping away. That's what it always is. Yes. But even I forget that, you know, it's just a matter of keeping going and staying in the process. And, you know, and not falling into these fantasies of the routine that I used to have and being needing that to be in order for me to be good and for me to be okay. Because your life changes, your circumstances change, right?
Yeah.
So you can't, everything isn't always set up the way that you want it to be. And you can let that be an excuse to not like engage in the things that really add value to your life just because it's not just right. But, you know.
Very good point.
It's never going to be just right. So you just have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
There you go.
Since we heard Noelle's laugh, I'll let her say a few words about her wellness journey.
Well, hi, everybody. My wellness journey today was basically being outdoor in our 30, basically, square meter garden. And enjoying the sun, which was not too hot, with just a white little breeze that was cool, but not too cool. So I wanted to take advantage of this rare, perfect day, I would say. And I was in a good mood because a week ago, I did take a workshop in painting. Usually I give the workshops. I'm a workshop leader for painting. But that time I took the painting workshop with somebody else. And so it gave me the opportunity to do a large painting. And I had not done that in quite a while. And that was very satisfying and rejuvenating and nourishing. And it gave me that sense of, why did I stop?
Right.
And the inspiration to keep it going.
Yeah, let's do the things that we know work, you know?
Right.
A lot of things we know work and, you know, we just sometimes neglect them for whatever reasons. And, you know, it doesn't matter what the reason is. If you recognize it, gently just begin again.
That's right. You know,
gently begin again. Don't,
right.
Don't do like me and say,
be kind.
Why is it so hard? Why did I do that?
Be kind to yourself.
Yeah, be cool with yourself and just ease back into it and get back into the things that bring you wellness on a regular basis.
And Jared, are you going to introduce our guest? I know you're excited to hear her story.
Yeah, so we got Noelle. After our break, we're going to come back and meet Noelle Imperato, who is an artist, an author, an educator, and really a fascinating person that I've known for almost a year now. Almost a year or so, I think, we met. And she's going to share a lot about her journey, finding meditation and healing through art in the way that she shares that with the community.
Welcome back, podcast listeners. We're excited here in the studio today. We have Noelle Imparato, a very accomplished person who has something very exciting to share. She started her career as an architect, moving slowly into film editing and filmmaker for 20 years. And she decided to go back to school at the age of 50 and earn a PhD in
depth psychology and mythology.
Wow, now she have a story, because then as she transitioned and finished her studies in her psychology, she decided to then become a full-time painter and develop workshops for the community.
So Noelle, welcome, and thank you for coming.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. This is a pleasure and an honor.
All right, so I'll say a little bit about how I met Noelle. And it was sort of in the context as a film editor, because Noelle came to Video Lab about a year ago to edit a talk that she did. And she kind of blew me away, because she just had this notebook full of, like, she had this full log of time stamped edits. She'd already done the edit on paper when she came in. And I was like, this is awesome. I got an opportunity to learn from a pro here. So she came in, and I got a chance to get familiar with her work through the experience of helping her work through that talk. And then since, I've become a student in a workshop, so I'm familiar with the process that she shares. So if you can go back just a little bit, Noelle, and kind of give us a quick timeline of the transition from leaving France, as you know, and coming to become a filmmaker, and what that experience was like for you.
Well, you have to remember this was the 60s, and I was a little bit late on that wave, but nevertheless, I wanted to go to India, like many young people did at the time. And somehow I ended up instead going towards Peru to meet the shamans of Peru.
So you left from France and went to Peru?
Yeah, we left from France on our way to Peru, but we went across the country through Los Angeles, and then I got trapped in Los Angeles.
Okay.
So in France, I had already studied architecture and cinema. And so since I was in Los Angeles and I found myself, you know, sort of, what am I going to do now? So eventually I found myself back on my feet and became a film editor in Hollywood, because after all, what's a better place to be a film editor than in Hollywood?
Right. This is almost at that point one of the only places to be to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. So that worked out, and but the thing is, I didn't really do what I wanted to do, because I wanted to make films that would be kind of talking about spirituality and spiritual knowledge, and would just help people to transform, like it had happened to me when I was 14 years old. And I saw a documentary about a yogi, Indian yogi, Sri Aurobindo, and his consort called The Mother. And just by watching that documentary, it completely gave my life a new direction. So that's why I wanted to do films, and I wanted to do films that would change people's lives. But, you know, I got sort of trapped in Hollywood, and that didn't really happen. So at age 50, I dropped out. And my husband was successful enough by then that I could drop out and then go to full-time school again and do my PhD in mythology and depth psychology. And at the same time, I was taking a lot of workshops, you know, on the West Coast. They have like so many great things. And in those years, you know, they had like fantastic teachers, which I realize now how lucky I am, because I studied with now all the big stars you know, meditation and activism, even like research in psychedelics. And I went to S. Allen Institute in Big Sur, California,
okay,
where they have all this amalgam of the best of the best. So this was fabulous. And there I learned how to paint in the basically art therapy approach.
Okay. So the desire to change people's lives with your art is something that started very young for you.
Yeah.
It just took a little bit of time. Just a little bit of time
yes,
to find the vehicle that was going to give you the opportunity to do it.
Yeah.
When you were going to go back to school, how did you figure out which path would give you the tools that you needed to do what you wanted to do?
Well, you know, I sort of go a little bit with the flow, with what's around. And to be honest, it was not so well planned. I did not know what I was going to do. And I didn't know why, really, I went to that school. It just was there. And somebody mentioned to me that there was a new department in that school that was known to be very progressive. And it was in Santa Barbara, which is only an hour drive from Los Angeles. And there also was a school that was private, but recognized by the University of California. And they did it for adults, which meant that we were on campus 3 days a month, and we slept on campus. So it gives us a chance to have a real community life, but only 3 days a month. So I thought that was just perfect on that level. It was a gorgeous place, you know. And I felt the idea of learning about Joseph Campbell, and they have like of course, this is big archetypal psychology.
Right, that's what I was going to ask
Jung.
About there. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you mentioned depth psychology and its connections to the archetypes. Can you say a little bit about what that means?
Yeah, archetypal psychology, basically, it's in opposition, I may say, to clinical psychology. So we are not really learning how to deal with the illness, mental illness, but more with the philosophical aspect of psychology, the large patterns where you might just, you know, classify people. So you have like the mother, the father, the son, the daughter. Those are archetypes that pretty much everybody can identify with, you know, whichever one. Or you have like, if you take the tarot cards, you would have, you know, the hermit or the world or the fool, or these kind of archetypes, you know, so psychological models or patterns that can be recognized throughout all the cultures. And that are the foundation, basically, of psychology.
So in studying those, in what ways do the understanding of these archetypes or the uncovering of these patterns, in what ways are they applied in terms of the way that people engage with, you know, engage with the work or engage with even like in the therapy sessions, the art therapy sessions?
Oh, everybody may just do their own application of the study, but, you know, it's kind of like when you learn any field, you have to learn the language, you have to learn the principal kind of ideas, you know. So if you learn about a goddess, let's say, there was a lot of learning about Greek mythology, you know, you learn about Aphrodite, you know. So Aphrodite is not just one word, you know, it's a constellation of different qualities that usually kind of bundles together. And so by learning all these different archetypes, you'll recognize them either in other people around you and within yourself. And then also you recognize them in art, and you recognize them in different cultures, you know, around the world and throughout history. So it gives you an entry into understanding the human mind.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Now, with the depth psychology, you know, it's from my understanding, just doing a little bit of homework prior to this, our session here today, was that it's exploring the unconscious mind.
Yeah.
Can you enlighten us a little bit more about that when we talk about the unconscious mind?
Yeah, that's really the most important thing in my work, as it turned out, you know, and even if it was not planned, but it's just the way it came out. Because at the same time, I was learning this all these different studies, Carl Jung and the shadow work, you know, which is basically facing all the things that we really don't like to face, you know, like all the shameful and hurt and trauma and all the kind of a darkness of the soul. And so as a preservative kind of a thing, to not feel bad, usually the response to that is to just, you know, shove it under the carpet and just go on with your life. But we forget that because we don't look at it doesn't mean it's gone
right
away, but instead it simmers into your whole being, you know, in your dreams perhaps at night, or in your unconscious kind of reasoning of why you say things or why you did things, and you are like, oh, why did you do that? You know, well, it's because there is all these unprocessed materials that haven't been dealt with. So the whole idea of Carl Jung idea is to bring all that darkness into light, and by looking at it face to face, that already starts to make it go away, because as Carl Jung said, you know, you cannot have darkness and light together.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. And I guess it's a little bit of a, there's a lot of fear involved with trying to pull that stuff up, because it's like a monster in there. You know?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, there is also a good reason why we sort of shove it down, because depending at what time in our life, for instance, when we are a child, maybe it's too much to deal with. Maybe we are not equipped yet to deal
right
with. So we protect ourselves, and so we can function in the world. So you don't want to go too deep too fast. You have to know how much you can handle and how much you can't. So whatever was sane to do when you were a child, but then now, you know, 20 years later, then you have created these habits, and it served you as a kid perhaps, but now it's no longer serving you. So that's why when people get to be like 30, 40, 50 years old, you know, then they start realizing, you know, what am I doing? Why am I doing it that way? Why am I keeping doing things that I really don't want to do and are not
right
good for me to do, and not really helpful, neither to myself or to others around me or to my relationships, you know? So now they start thinking, okay, something has to be dealt with.
Right.
How much does our social atmosphere and also the values and the principles within our culture affect that as well, driving things to the unconscious level?
I'm sure everything is, you know, we are basically very much part of our culture. If we are thinking of ourselves as individuals, we are a lot more than we think part of our culture. But how you deal with it, you know, is, I don't know if I can generalize about that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I guess the powerful thing is the fact that regardless of what culture you're in, the archetypes are so universal that you can still learn from and gain some understanding, because they're kind of contained in almost any culture that you
Yeah, and the interesting thing is with the painting, for instance, you know, with the writing, I think writing works more from the left brain. When painting is more from the right brain, meaning it's more intuitive and it the creativity, more creative, and basically it allows for material from the unconscious to come up even without knowing why. When I started the painting, I was surprised myself of how many mythic creatures came into the page. You know, they were not perfectly like Kali, the dark mother in the Hindu mythology, or, you know, any other kind of a goddess figure or things like this. You know, they were not perfectly the way they are usually painted, but you could still see there were recognizable elements, and somehow they just came up instinctively, I would say. Mm-hmm. So then, you know, it was a question of how much they talk to you, what are their qualities, so you can study their qualities, and then you can sort of start having a relationship. You know, what is this telling me? And so your painting speaks back to you. If, in the first place, you know, you approach the white page with being just very present, mm-hmm. and allowing whatever wants to come up to come up,
right.
without trying to control. So then that gives a chance for the unconscious to sort of find its way, which can often be very surprising even to the painter itself, you know.
So just to clarify and understand, so what stimulates the digging into the unconsciousness is pretty much just staring at the white page? Is that what I'm hearing?
No.
Okay. No. Just clarify.
No, it's being present.
Okay, very good.
It's being present. And that's the hard part because, you know, being present is not just a little world, you know. It's becoming fully present in your whole body. Mm-hmm. So when you do that, you know, it's not something you can do just like that. You know, you just practice and you learn. That's where meditation becomes very important. We do a little meditation before we paint to sort of help us sort of become present. And I believe the more meditation you do, unless you are gifted naturally, but for a lot of people, you know, doing practice meditation on a regular basis helps you to become more present. So that means you just quiet your little audio cassette that you have in your mind, you know, that is all constantly telling you something. So that's kind of a habit. Patterns of conditioning, you know, that keeps your mind busy constantly on the same tracks. So if you quiet that aspect of your brain and just drop down more into your body and your feelings, you become aware of your feelings, body sensation or feeling, emotional feelings, you become aware of hearing the outside world, but also hearing that dialogue within yourself, seeing the outside world, but also seeing perhaps, you know, images that sort of flashes through your mind as you have memories or you think about people or places or things like this, or perhaps even imagining different things, you know. So you become more aware of whatever goes on to yourself, but you are not overwhelmed by it, or you are not just driven by it. You become like the witness of your own self. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So if you drop into that place, then, you know, there is a lot of intuition, a lot of insight, a lot of different links between this and that, that may arise all by itself. So mm-hmm. you have to trust that basically everybody has that creative aspect of themselves. Everybody has their inner artist. And even if you are not technically trained to be doing, you know, you are not a professional artist, that doesn't mean you don't have that artist in you. And it whatever you are going to be creating might not be to be put in a gallery, but it's going to express yourself mm-hmm. in a very meaningful way for yourself, at least. And if you are really honest and if you work with a sense of integrity, other people can also pick up on the state of mind that you had when you were doing the work.
And two things I want to bring to the podcast listeners. I attended a workshop with Noelle, and one of the important pieces that we haven't shared, or she hasn't shared yet, is that it was also guided. She did some guiding. She guided to channel the thought and the mood, which actually impacted my experience when I was being an artist. and I just wanted to define what artist is. It's a person who produces painting or drawing as a hobby or interest, just a self-expression. So we're all, yes, I agree, we are all artists. We have an expression, we have thoughts, we have feelings. And the white paper that I spoke about earlier is an opportunity to flash those thoughts and that creativity onto to make it more dimensional for yourself and, like you say, others. Because we also shared our painting at the end and what we thought we saw in our painting and expressed that thought and feeling amongst others, connecting them to seeing what we saw. So, yes.
Yeah, the idea, I think it's liberating.
Yes, it was liberating.
It's liberating. By putting all these dark emotions onto the paper, there is a distanciation that happens, and you are tending at least to be less overwhelmed by them mm-hmm. and seeing them more as a witness again, you know, so then there is a sense of freedom there.
Yes. I think a big part of it, too, as someone who's attended quite a few, the community aspect of it is important, too, I think. I knew if you're a listener and if you don't have a meditation practice and, you know, it's kind of a solitary, can be an intimidating thing. How would you recommend, if someone isn't connected to others, how do they get started with a practice of meditation, sort of just to begin that habit of presence, so developing that, cultivating that ability or that aptitude for being present and being mindful?
Well, that's, I would say personally, I was not able to do it on my own. I had to find a teacher before I could really do a sustained practice. So I would recommend to find a teacher any way you can. There are quite a few things around now, and not like 50 years ago. Now meditation has become mainstream, and I think it's a lot easier to find a little group somewhere nearby you. And if that's not happening, there are lots of things on internet. There is a lot of guided meditation that you can find on internet. And if you are interested with the mindfulness society, Sangha, you know, they have a lot of Facebook pages and websites, and the insight meditation I would definitely recommend, and people like that, yeah.
Right, so I guess the advice is, if you're thinking about doing it by yourself, don't.
Well, you can try if you are gifted for that. You can, but I think it's very difficult.
Right, because community is important, and just being a part of a community as you embark on this is a very important thing. I know that it's always been true for me that when I've done work like this in community, it's always been much more sustainable for me. Mm-hmm. And the growth was a lot more, evident being a part of a community around mm-hmm. that. So mm-hmm. seek community for practices like this, I think is probably a good idea, because it can be very, it's not easy. Meditation is not like chilling. You're not chilling, you know, it's work. It is definitely work. So having a community to support that type of endeavor, I think is really, really important. And with Noelle, working with her, there is a community. I'm fortunate that there's a community there of people who are engaging in this practice, and we're kind of growing together in the practice. So it was really, really powerful.
I want to emphasize that part with Jared expressed, because when you do have community, there's support there. You're talking about healing and looking at the unconscious and in the darkness involved in it. So that's a very challenging experience itself, okay? Not just being in the presence, but also exploring areas that obviously you did not, often we've subconsciously suppressed to an area that we didn't want to deal with. So dealing with it, you need support. You need that community. You need someone who is actually, in my practice as a therapist, we deal a lot with psychologists, and it's nothing more valuable than having someone guiding that process a lot along the way. It's very, very impactful. So I understand and support exactly everything you said and your experience.
And you know, I just thought about this too. Mm-hmm. I have a writing group that I haven't been to in a long time that I could probably go to again.
It's support, right?
It's still there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Don't try to be a hero with it. Don't try to be a superstar. Mm-hmm. Everybody needs that support.
Most definitely. I wanted to explore and talk a little bit about the mind, body, spirit, and how the unconscious, trying to go through the process of healing, how that would affect our health, our spirit and mind.
Mm. Well, this is not really my expertise area, but I do follow through a lot of blogs on the internet about the brain research and what they have unveiled in especially, I would say, the past 2 decades, and the connection between physical health and mental health. So there is definitely a very strong link, as I believe we are just one being. For scientific purpose, we kind of put things apart. And also our culture, unfortunately, has the primary vision of the world as everything being separated. You know, they pretty much since the 18th century, we look at the universe as like a bundle of dead rocks floating around in time and space, you know, everybody being separate. And we look at ourselves the same way as human being, you know, all separate from each other. We look at humanity basically being separate from the animals and the plant kingdom and all this kind of a vision. When I think what's happening now with the study of the mind and also the quantum theory and the physicist and all of the different science are kind of more going into the direction where we now can envision the world as being alive and everything is pure energy, really. Mm-hmm. That's what the physicists are telling us. So everything is energy and everything is interconnected. And that sense of interconnection, if we only could embrace it, that in itself is very healing. Mm-hmm.
This is I've been wanting to interview Ms. Noel for quite some time, so this has been exciting. Yeah, I believe in what you do and your vision for what you're doing. Very much needed in the community.
Well, thank you.
Yes, and I employ that any podcast listeners, how can they be able to reach you?
Well, I have this little Painting for Life workshop, which I do every other Saturday. And maybe we can put the link. I do a lot of the promotion on Facebook, so people can reach me through Facebook and they can text me through Messenger. And then I send emails, you know, to whoever gives me a sense that they might be interested. So then they can know the time and, updates.
Very good. Well, we want to thank you for taking the time to join us here at the Wellness Connection.
Well, thank you very much also for inviting me. I'm very happy to be able to do it. And I'm doing this mostly because I want to give back, because I'm mainly retired. So I'm doing it because I find nourishment for myself in it, as well as, giving. So that sense of interconnectedness, I think it's important to cultivate it until the last day.
That's right. Amen. That's right. Well, thank you, podcast listeners. I'm hoping this episode will be a meaningful tool and resource for you. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a rating and review. A review actually helps other people find the show. You can also connect with us at thewellnessconnection.health, where you can design your wellness journey using tools and resources that enable, promote, facilitate, an ultimate meaningful health and wellness journey for you. My name is Karen Bell, and we have with us
Jared Forte
with the Health Wellness Connection. On the Wellness Connection, remember, it's our aim to bring quality living to everyday life.